Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Anything going on?
Maybe. apparently, their WWC is kicking off in June with an all-new format. I literally got a text just as we started this call.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah, breaking news right here on the Secret Podcast. Apple just put out a news release that Lex Friedman texted me. Now its 31st year, WCDC 2020 will take an entirely new online format pack with content for consumers, press, and developers alike. Current health situation required we create a new WWC 20 format. Delivers a full program with online keynote and sessions, offering a great learning experience for our entire developer community all around the world. We will be sharing all the details in the weeks ahead, says Phil Schiller. Provide Apple's entire global developer community, which now includes more than 23 million developers, blah, 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 blah. Additional program information will be shared between now and June. I was going to joke this morning.
Do you have a link for that? Send me a link.
Yeah, I got a link for that. I was going to joke this morning, like, what the over-under was on Apple canceling by, 4 p.m. today or so, which is when you ditch bad news, right? Like, but apparently, yeah, earlier. I've pasted a link in the Skype chat for you.
Oh, the Skype chat. Oh, you're giving everything away. I've also seen
that now. There's too many vectors. There's too many vectors.
Yeah, man, you're telling me. There's too many vectors for lots of stuff. Completely new online experience. Well, they've done what we expected them to do. It's interesting because they basically said, look, we're not doing this, and we'll do it online. It'll be great.
And so they're also apparently committing $1 million to local San Jose organizations to offset the revenue loss from nobody being in San Jose.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, that's nice. Sure.
But
I don't know what that looks like. But yeah, I guess maybe those local businesses and other organizations. I mean, the big question is for, we expected this from Apple, right?
Like, yep.
That seems exactly what we assumed would happen. The question will be for a lot of those smaller conferences that sort of follow on to WWDC, which, presumably cannot happen now.
Or, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's no point to having it if there's no people there already. And those people organizing those have a lot harder time, obviously, because they make their money from that conference, right? Apple doesn't make their money from WWDC. That's just a thing they do. So that's pretty well, it's going to be, man, this is the year I think I don't go anywhere. I was supposed to go to Seattle. That's not happening. I was probably going to go to WWDC. That's not happening. Supposed to go to Disney World next month. That's probably like 90% not happening unless a miracle occurs. I'm scheduled to go to Gen Con in August. Well, that could still happen. It's a ways off.
I don't know either.
I'm not optimistic about it, but it's not out of the question.
Well, I've just canceled my hotel reservations for San Jose.
I hadn't even made any yet, but it's good, just as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the world we live in.
I know. I said this, I tweeted this yesterday, but I think it reminds me of the famous Hemingway quote about how you go broke, which is two ways, gradually, then suddenly. And that's kind of how this feels. Like, it was, we knew it was out there, and like we saw all the effects overseas, and you could tell, right? Like, everyone knew this is the kind of thing that doesn't stay contained. And yet, in the last, every day it feels like in the last week has been just more rapidly changing than the day before it, and more like severe stuff happening just in terms of what's still going on. I mean, closing down Broadway, they've postponed the Boston Marathon. I mean, all this stuff that you feel like are these big immutable institutions.
Yeah, well, I mean, if there's any lesson that we've learned, and I'm not sure we
please
have...
Please tell me, Jason, there's a lesson.
No, it is that right now, the thing that we need to do in order to reduce and slow the spread is to not have big gatherings of people. That's basically like the number one thing, as far as I can tell, having read a bunch of stuff about this, is don't be in crowds. And one way you don't be in crowds is not have crowds, by not having any event where there's crowds and people traveling from place to place and coming in contact with more people in a crowd. It's like the worst thing you could do. And there seems to have been, this is not a pandemic podcast, but it seems to have been in the last week that everybody's kind of gone through their processing period of like, but that means that all these things we like to do won't happen, and finally have reached the other side, which is, yeah, these things we like to do can't happen. Right. And that's good, because that's the truth, is there are lots of things that are fun and great, and they can't happen right now because we need to protect, especially our most vulnerable health-wise, our older people especially.
Yeah.
Our parents and grandparents and the like.
So I had a sobering thought yesterday, which I shared in the in one of our Slacks,
one of our many Slacks.
Like, yeah, you know, my dad is, he turns 81 next month. Mm-hmm. My mom is 77, and it's like, I don't know when I'm going to see them next, just because of the uncertainty over this whole thing, and like the uncertainty over how this is transmitted, and like you can be asymptomatic but still pass stuff on. Like, because of the uncertainty about the details, about knowing what the profile of this virus is, like the abundance of caution approach is just, I'm not going to see, they live half an hour from me. I'm not going to see them probably for weeks, if not longer.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know how that plays out. So I hope that we will eventually have enough information to make more educated decisions. But
yeah. For people like you and me, I had this moment the other day where I was like, oh, well, okay, everybody's going to be at home. What does that mean? I thought, I'm always at home. Like, it doesn't change for me, but it's going to change for a lot of people. And in fact, in my house, I will tell you, my son is now schooling from home.
Mm-hmm.
As of today, they've shut down his school, but he's still expected to do his schoolwork. That's going to be fun.
Right.
And my daughter, all her finals next week are online only. And then the universities, the first 3 weeks, they say at least are going to be online only. She may have a whole quarter of online. So we're going to have a lot of people in this house doing remote work, which is going to be, it's a thing that's going around. And I mean, the great thing about it is a lot of jobs can be done remotely, and we have the technology to do that now, which we haven't in the past. So this won't be, and we have social media and we have Slacks and we have texts and we have things to keep us from being, the things that keep us from being isolated in our regular lives now can help keep everybody from being feeling quite as isolated.
I decided yesterday that I'm going to stop going to work at the coffee shop for the duration.
Yeah.
Just because.
Yeah.
Why? I mean,
I had a moment yesterday
from home
where I was writing a column. I was writing a Tom's Guide column for our friend Phil. And I had the moment where I was like, I could go to Starbucks and write this, and I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm not doing that anymore. Nope.
It's weirder for me because I feel very like that's my outlet.
I know.
And you know, my wife, she works long hours. So, you know, she leaves and she's emergency personnel, so she is technically still going in, even though she's going to try to minimize and work from home some days. So like, but there are days when, you know, she leaves at 7 or whatever and gets home at past 7, and it's like I have a solid 12 hours now where I am by myself and I can't even go to the coffee shop. I mean, I might go to the coffee shop and get a coffee to go or something like that, but I'm not going to go sit there and work for a couple hours like I normally would. So, yeah, I don't know. My habits, especially like after I got sick earlier this year, my habits of like going outside and taking a walk every day has been sort of my one solace. So and keep doing that. Feel fine about that and get out.
Yeah, sure.
Legs,
I mean,
for half
going
an hour.
Outside is not the same, right? It's the being in crowds and being around
closed
people
spaces
who,
and yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm still going to, I need to go to the grocery store, you know, like, I went yesterday and a lot of stuff was kind of picked over. So I'm hoping that part of it calms down a little bit.
Even in Italy, the grocery stores are open, right?
Yes. Right. You can't, people got to eat. You got to eat. So you can't stop that.
You got to eat.
Anyway.
Right?
Anyway, I mean, we could talk about something that is not coronavirus related as well.
I think now that I've had a moment on a podcast to digest the news, I think what's really going to be interesting about WWDC is, it's easy to say, hard to attend, the is how they do it, whether the, you know, whether they try to find some way to replicate kind of the interaction, or whether it's really just kind of like a session thing, because what they, you know, where it's videos and that's all you get. It would be really nice if there was some more personal interaction. I know that's very hard to scale, but I hope they do more of that.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating too, because they specifically call out content for consumers, press, and developers. WWDC has never been a huge consumer show, right? Like, certainly people watch the keynote, but like beyond that, there hasn't really been like a direct consumer appeal. I don't know if that's what they're, again, we don't know the details. They say next few weeks they'll be talking about it. But like, yeah, are they changing it? Maybe they'll, I mean, you could do crazy things like breaking up the keynote into like different sessions. I don't know. Like, if there's no audience, there's no rules, right? You could be like, Monday, we're going to talk about iOS. Tuesday, we're going to talk about macOS. Wednesday, right?
Like, they said kicks off in June. It's like, for all we know, they're going to do sessions
all month,
or even summer, right? Like, you could have sessions every week. It could be, you know, Apple University for, well, there already is an Apple University, isn't there? Apple Developer University and Land Grant University College, teaching college of minds. I don't know. I'm just throwing out all the things in tech and military and agriculture university. Anyway, they could do that and have it roll out over like even longer than June. It kicks off in June. It could continue to kick, is what I'm saying.
Right. Sure. And I mean, they mentioned, let's see, they also say early access to the future of iOS, iPadOS, etc., which, you know, there's betas, right? And engage with Apple engineers. So yes, well, you know, they clearly realize that's a big thing, right? So they have to figure out a way to, how are we going to do, we're going to do a 64-person FaceTime call with an Apple engineer and 63 developers. Have fun. Fascinating. Yeah. I have no idea how that plays out. That looks bananas. But, I mean, also, arguably, for those of us who do travel a long way, obviously we'll miss the social aspect, but, like, you know, I'll miss it too,
and I travel a short way.
Yeah, right. But, you know, at least, you know, there's still access to some of this stuff, and we'll have stuff to talk about and stuff to write about and
dear
all that jazz.
Dear listener, you can go to sixcolors.com and now see that I've done a link post that I literally wrote while Dan was talking. So
I was trying to give you that time.
Thank you. So we'll see. But I like the fact, as you said, that the engage with Apple engineers is part of this. Hopefully they don't just mean like engage in watching a video where they're there. But, you know, it's because WWDC, it's a funny event, right? Because it serves a bunch of different purposes. It is, you know, like it says consumers and press and stuff. It's like, it is an Apple product launch platform, even though that's irrelevant to the developer message. Often, it's still a product launch platform. It gives them an opportunity to launch new products if they want to. And so that makes it it's a press event, it's a consumer event. And then they also have the ongoing like developer thing. So different audiences for different stuff. A lot of speculation that this year they also have to start explaining a lot of changes they're making to their platforms, right? like the anticipation
sure,
is
yeah.
they may be talking about why there's a cursor on the iPad. Well, that's weird. They may
or
also be talking
ARM
about
chips.
ARM Max, yeah. right? And an ARM transition and having to explain that. And those are developer issues, but they're also let's explain our strategy issues, which goes to the, you know, investors want to know about that and the press wants to know, obviously, and people invested
also,
in the platform want to know.
There's also questions of, I mean, WWDC does not always have hardware.
No.
But it often has hardware.
Because it's a again, it's sort of,
yeah,
why not?
It's a state of the union, right? And like, so I guess my question, though, is like, let's say that you're saying we're going to do a transition to ARM and we've got, you know, we are somehow making available like ARM dev kits or something like that, you know, whether it's your idea of like an iPad style thing that's running an ARM chip that's, you know, got a macOS on it or, you know, prototype Mac OS. I don't know if this will happen, but like, you know, it's an interesting way. You'll have to figure out a way to disseminate those. You have to figure out if you are having other hardware that are consumer releases. I assume there will probably still be some maybe individual press briefings, or maybe a smaller, you know, like a small group of press going to a location. I mean, again, it depends on what the world looks like 3 months from now. But yeah, those are things. I mean, obviously, those are things you can't do online, right? You can't give people a hands on with a new piece of hardware online. And I mean, that's a relevant concern for any event or product release that happens between now and June as well. And there's been some murmurings of, you know, how the current situation affects products that are expected to surface before then, right? Like we had talked about a lower cost iPhone,
right?
Talked about an iPad Pro update, talked about those keyboards.
There was a report that they were planning an event at the end of the month
and that's canceled.
So there's a question.
Those reports suggest the products too may even not be ready, right? Depending on production and scale and all that.
Yeah.
So
I think we're entering an era where, you know, Apple has this ability to choose the scale at which they want to launch a product. And we saw it with the 16-inch MacBook Pro where that was some briefings. And I suspect that that will happen again. I wonder if there's an even lower level where they don't even do it in person, where they like
do a
phone call or a video conference with members of the press. Like, let's say I did get a 13-inch MacBook Pro briefing. Would they just... I've had phone briefings with them before. Would we just do a phone briefing and they would FedEx me a laptop to review?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Maybe.
Possibly. Yeah. You know, would they do that? Or is it going to be, you know, come down to Cupertino, Jason, and it's just me and two other people and we don't shake hands and we talk and then they hand me a laptop and I cover myself in hand sanitizer and I go home?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the former, at least, is like if you got that whole abundance of caution, the watchword of 2020, I feel like you just send somebody a laptop at that point, right?
The only thing is, if it hasn't been announced yet, do you really want unannounced products going through even through FedEx, or do you want to just do a physical handoff of those? And I could see that, and I could see them, because they have the ability to do this, they can do a New York and Cupertino rollout with briefings, and they could manage that, right? I feel like they could manage that. It certainly is a tool that is at their disposal because they've done that before. So they don't need to have a big thing. And you could argue maybe that gives them the advantage of rolling out things over a longer stretch of time instead of having to announce five things on stage at an event, which I think is actually better if you get the rolling thunder of a new product every week over 5 weeks rather than announcing five products in a 90-minute period.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's a lot more you can potentially do if you're not constrained to a, you know, very specific format. But seeing the adjustment over that, especially because, you know, we in this particular community in these particular jobs have been waiting for some of these things too, right? And it kind of feels like, well, you know, you're in the quiet period between the, you know, end of the holiday quarter and you know, WWDC or a March event, and all of a sudden it's like that quiet period may stretch a lot longer than we had initially anticipated.
Yeah.
So you got to vamp a little. You got to come up with some other stuff to talk about. I will say, of all the stuff that I did see reported this week, and there was a lot that was reported this week, I am very excited for the potential of a MacBook Air with the new keyboard, which they're suggesting could come as early as the second quarter, just because that's the machine I've been waiting for.
That's right. Dan alert.
Although, my alert. Although next year, now that same report, which was from Ming-Chi Kuo, also said that the, you know, a new version, an ARM-based version of those could come out next year, essentially, or I think was it first half of 2021? I can't remember now, but I think that was the suggestion. And it's like, I want one of those too, but I also feel like first generation new processor, maybe let them work out the kinks first. So invest in a nice tried and true MacBook Air with a new keyboard, and then we'll see how the new ARM-based stuff develops. And then, you know, maybe I sell that and buy an ARM one. I'm just making future plans because there's really nothing else to do, like spinning out my hardware strategy.
I gotta say, it started as a I'm not a crackpot kind of theory, but I am advancing it, which is if this ARM transition really happens, I would almost put money on the fact that that new iPad Pro with the keyboard and the trackpad is going to be a Mac ARM development machine.
Hmm.
That you would actually be able to run macOS on an iPad
Like,
for
they might
developers.
Not even tell you that when it ships, but like then in June they'll be like, by the way, if you bought one of those.
Well, yeah, they'll announce, if they announce an ARM transition, that's how I'm expecting they would say it, is they'll announce an ARM transition, and they'll be like, now, you know, when we did this with Intel, we provided developers with this giant box, giant Intel box. Well, we're not going to do that this year. Instead, do you have an iPad Pro? Because there'll be a developer edition of macOS for ARM that'll you can install on an iPad Pro. You'll never get your iPad back, but you can turn it into a Mac temporarily.
That's fascinating.
And that would be really interesting. Right,
I think I'd have to buy another iPad just to like, do it. I don't know. That's wild. It's a wild.
I don't know. I had my piece on Macworld this week, which was twice as long as it needed to be. I mean, like, because I feel like if I hit 800 words, I've given them what they paid for. And I wrote, I just kept going. I was sitting outside. It was a warm day, and I was sitting out there, and I just kept going. And I thought, can I cut from this? But I really couldn't. Because a little insider thing, one thing that happens is if I write 800 words for Macworld, I do look at it and think, could I remove 800 words of this and put it on six colors instead, right? Like, because I don't need to get, but I couldn't in this case. I really need to give them the whole thing because it made sense as a whole. And I really got kind of worked up for it as I was writing on it. Like, and I'm pretty happy with how it turned out, but it's all about that cursor thing. Part of it is I got queried, and so did Federico and probably some other people, by a guy who works for a tech website, saying that he was going to write a story about how stupid it was that they were going to put cursor support on the iPad and how they were ruining the iPad. And I passed this on to Mike and Federico, and Federico was like, oh, yeah, I got that email, too. And my response to the guy was basically, this is the topic of a column I'm writing for Macworld, so if you'd like my opinions on it, just wait till tomorrow morning and you'll see it. I don't think he's actually written that story, but at least I couldn't find it. But it made me even more worked up about this because I totally disagree with that. Like this whole and so the Macworld piece is basically, all right, first off, the iPad always had a keyboard because there was a keyboard dock in the first iPad. So saying, oh, well, smart keyboard, it ruined the iPad. Why do you need a keyboard and an iPad? You should just have the iPad be the platonic ideal of just a tablet. But then you throw in like the Apple Pencil and everybody freaked out like, oh, they can't do a stylus because if you see a stylus, they blew it. But those people misunderstood the entire point, which is if a stylus is required, they blew it. If a keyboard is required, they blew it. And with the cursor support stuff, or whether it's the assistive touch stuff that's in iOS 13, or the rumor that there's going to be straight up like cursor support to click and swipe on things in iOS or iPadOS 14, you know, if you require a mouse, they blew it. That's still going to be true. The whole idea is the optionality of it. The fact that this is what really got me excited is what makes the iPad great and why I love the iPad is specifically that it starts as this naked touchscreen tablet. But that if I want to put it in a context where it's a different kind of device, it does it. Like, if I want to make it a laptop, it's a laptop. And then I pull it out of the case and it's not a laptop anymore. And there's no MacBook that will do that. If I want to use a pencil with it, I can. I do that for editing podcasts. Otherwise, I don't use the pencil and I don't need to. And this is going to be like that. It's additive. It adds to the flexibility of the iPad, which I love. But if they, and again, one of the arguments that I saw from some people on Twitter was, yeah, but what if Apple does a bad job? And it's like that, you could literally say that about anything ever, which is, here's an idea, you know, well, let's make a movie about a space gorilla and his friend who are smugglers, and they pick up a kid and an old man, and there's a guy dressed in black who's trying to kill them. And it's like, wow, well, I mean, I guess that could be a movie classic, but if they screw it up, it could be really bad. It's like, well, yes, if they screw it up, it could be really bad. That's always the case. And if Apple allows apps into the App Store that require you to connect a mouse, then they screwed it up, right? But that's not going to happen. And because, unlike the Mac, where you'd have to make all the targets bigger to make the Mac touchified, the targets are already touch size on the iPad. So having a cursor, it doesn't really change. The iPad doesn't have to adjust because a cursor's been added, because a mouse has been attached, which is not the case, which is why Apple has sort of said, no, we're not going to do that with the Mac, because we don't want to mess up the Mac, just add touch. We'll just add Mac-y stuff to the iPad instead. So I'm excited about that rumor. I hope they fully embrace it. I think it opens up lots of doors. I didn't even mention, except in passing, like, If you can do full-on cursor and keyboard support, you know, presumably they'll do external display support that's true extended desktop support, where you could launch apps on a monitor. because you could drive them. If you have a cursor and a keyboard, you could actually drive them. It means that they could create an iOS laptop if they wanted to. It means they could create a Surface Studio kind of device that's a touchscreen pencil device when it's down, and then you pop it up and use a keyboard and mouse. It really does open up the iPad to a lot of different options to do more stuff without changing its fundamental, which is when it's a touchscreen tablet, it's a touchscreen tablet. So that was my macro piece on, you know, so I don't agree with the take that it's like, oh, you're ruining the iPad. By one guy I was talking to on Twitter is like, but I'm concerned. First off, I'm concerned that Apple do a bad job, which, yeah, sure, okay, we can be concerned about that. But the other thing was like, well, what if it doesn't, you know, what if it wrecks things? What if they do bad things? What it's like, I just don't see it. I just don't see how this is adding. The solution isn't, let's not add functionality to the iPad because it exists on the Mac. I think adding more functionality to the iPad makes the iPad better. And if it's optional, then if you don't care about it, you just never use it, right? Like, if you don't have a keyboard, you don't have a pencil, you don't have a mouse attached to your iPad, it's just an iPad, and you never think about it. And that's fine, too. Like, I'm not arguing we should change the fundamentals of what an iPad is. I'm saying I love that they're rumored to be adding to it.
It's funny, because the same people who often complain about these things are the people who also complain when there's, like, not an option for something in like the preferences. Why isn't this a toggle in the preferences? You know, people get very bent out of shape when Apple like decides a behavior is going to be this way, and they're like, but I liked it this other way that you used to do it. Why isn't there, you know, a toggle or something? And Apple's always very, you know, it does that in some cases, but it doesn't do it for everything, obviously. And now these are the, I feel like there's a large Venn diagram intersection between that and people who are complaining that but now they're adding these other optional things you can do on the iPad. It's like, yes, but options are good, right? Like, especially if they don't impact the fundamental way that device gets used. It just provides more above and beyond, right? Like, I don't know. That strikes me as funny, because I do feel like, you know, how many of those critiques also come from people who actually use the iPad regularly, like, right, and aren't the same people decrying the iPad as a device you can't do any work on?
Yeah.
Like, there are some people who are just, here to carp, right? Like, that is, it's kind of the way.
And the Mac thing, like, that I keep going back to with a lot of these people is, like, well, I just don't want them to do a bad version of the Mac on the iPad. It's like, well, okay, so the Mac exists. I don't want them to mess up the Mac. So let's leave the Mac there. Don't withhold features from the iPad because they exist on the Mac, because that's bad. Like, you should continue to grow it. And does the iPad end up being a second take, a 2020 take on the stuff that was a 1980/2000 take on it on macOS and macOS 10? Yes. And is some of that stuff really lacking in terms of quality? Yes. Yes, it absolutely is. The early days of macOS 10 were also really lacking, by the way. Apple hasn't put enough effort into iPad software, and I hope that's changing now, because, you know, the more of this they do, the more we're going to ask for in terms of, like, files. I was just doing this yesterday. I was trying to connect to my local server using files on an SMB server, and it just didn't work. And then I like backed all the way out and then went back in, and then it loaded. And I'm like, really? It's just connecting to a file server. This shouldn't be that hard. And it's like,
right,
yeah, files, as detailed by many pieces in the last couple of months, files is kind of broken, and they need to fix it. Like, it's not good enough. But Apple doing a bad job with executing on files is not an argument against trying. So I don't know. It's the iPad continues to be this fascinating Rorschach test where people look at it and have different reactions to it. I think it's funny that John Gruber has been spending so much time complaining about iPad stuff, and people take it as being like, wow, Gruber's really ripping on the iPad. Like, I actually think it's a great sign, because it shows that Gruber is engaged with the iPad in a way that he wasn't before. I actually think that he cares more about the iPad than he ever has, and that he's taking it seriously in a way he never did, because he was just never that into it. And when he starts asking questions about, like, why does it do this? Why is this, you know, letting us down? Those are the same questions that Federico is asking. And if people haven't listened to that talk show episode, it's pretty great. It's pretty great. And it's short. It's only like 2 hours. it's a good conversation. And nobody knows the limitations of the iPad more than people who use the iPad every day. That's the funny thing. It's like, oh, you guys are going to mix it up because Gruber's got criticisms of the iPad. Just like, do you think Federico doesn't have criticisms of the iPad? He knows exactly what's broken, every detail. He knows what's broken and when it was broken and when it was not broken and how it became broken. He knows all of it. So I don't know. It's going to change the conversation again, though, if we spend the summer wondering about, like, why is there a mouse cursor on my iPad and what does that mean? And I feel like the bigger story of what Apple, like, I always want to know the stories they tell. It's like, what story do they tell about the iPad? Where do they think the iPad is going that they're adding full on cursor support? And what does that mean? And is Safari going to get mouse over support? If you plug in a mouse, is that desktop style Safari going to actually act like a PC, including like noting where the cursor is? Cause you know, that's a big change from what's on there now. That virtual finger, there's no concept of a hover state. It's an invisible menacing finger until you click and then it's a finger tap. But they could do like a lot of other stuff with it if they want to. And so I look forward to hearing that story.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree with you. There's a lot more, as we always say, the devil's in the details and the key is in the implementation and, you know, figuring out exactly how those details are going to work. I mean, it's always fascinating to me that there do seem to be like there are some things, features in the iPad and in iPad apps that are like, by virtue of the fact that some of Apple's apps in particular share code bases with their Mac apps, you end up with features that aren't always exposed, right? For example, the fact that all the iWork apps had keyboard shortcuts long before that was like an officially documented thing. Like they existed for a long time and you could only use them if you got a keyboard connected, obviously. But all the ones that you used for your standard, you know, like in on the Mac or for Mail or for Safari, like they all worked for a long time, like even before Apple was pushing as hard on the keyboard stuff as they are now. So in same ways, I wonder how many things from the Mac will migrate their way over. It's obviously a little bit different with pointer support than with keyboard support because, as we said, the iPad had a keyboard even like when it was announced, right? Like even right. If some of the features weren't documented, it's always been there in some form or another. And they didn't necessarily have the pointer support. But I don't know. I mean, it's interesting.
There is what's interesting about it is that there's a base of it that you can do by virtual finger support, basically. So you could say, like, by default, apps just kind of behave like that's a finger. And but you can update your apps to understand that it's a pointer and behave differently. And right. Presumably that's exactly the same tool that you would use to do that on Catalyst. Mm-hmm. And so I can see how that would work and that it might actually be good. But you know, again, maybe not. Who knows? I mean, it's all in the details. And we're going to get that first beta and be like, oh, no, this is, and it's like a first beta. And then we'll spend the summer wondering if it's going to be like that when it ships. And maybe it will be. I don't know. Or maybe it'll change. We just, that's part of the adventure of the summer. I want to backtrack about something that you said. Would you really defer a laptop purchase a year and then get a first generation ARM MacBook?
No, that's what I was saying. Okay. Like I wanted one, but there was more when it was like, well, if it's in the window where I was going to upgrade. And then I think,
but
you know,
you're through the window without a laptop now at this point, right?
Right. Well, I think the issue is I had always said, basically, I'm waiting for them to put the scissor keyboard in a MacBook Air. And at that point, you know, if assuming that something got announced basically by WWDC, right? Like, you know, because usually there's some stuff in March and then WWDC, there might be some announcements. And I figured if I got past WWDC and there was nothing like what I wanted, I would just buy whatever MacBook Air was on the market. And that might even be the one with the butterfly keyboard if like that's where there is. Because again, I can't, there's only so long I can go without a laptop. Although I will say I have been using my iPad a lot more. And as a result, I have not been using my laptop as much. So, you know, it ended up being a question of like, well, do I really need another laptop? Is this one that I have fine for like the few examples where I do need it? Can I do everything else on the iPad? I don't know. I mean, the profile of what an ARM-based MacBook gives you is attractive to me, but I agree, waiting for a first-generation product that's probably a year out is too long. Like, that's just not, doesn't make any sense. So I think there probably comes a point where it's like, well, does that scissor keyboard MacBook Air exist? If it doesn't exist, do I just try to like whittle down my laptop usage further and use my iPad for more and more stuff? It ends up that like the thing that I most needed my MacBook Air for was things like when I travel, which I'm not doing this year, apparently. So it's not as critical. I may not be leaving my house, in which case a laptop is really low priority for me because I'm either going to use my iMac or I'm going to use my iPad probably or my phone, right? Like if I'm just around the house playing music or, you know, sitting on the couch and doing some web browsing or whatever, I don't really need a laptop as much for that.
Right.
So, you know, certainly the urgency of getting a new one has diminished over the past weeks and months. But eventually, I am sure I will need to buy a new laptop just because it's still a useful tool for me. And I feel like I should probably replace the one I have now, which is coming up on 6 years old.
But good news. You can't ever leave the house, so right. You don't need a
laptop. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's low priority. So I can get by with an iPad fine, or I use my iMac for everything when I'm in the house anyway. So
yeah.
So I'm not worrying about it now. It's just for, you know, because I you know, I'm bored and need a new toy. Like it's the main appeal. It's the same reason I had that router sitting in my Amazon shopping cart. That's gonna be my new house project, is rewiring the network.
Oh yeah. So have you pulled the trigger
on replacing
your Wi-Fi?
Here.
No.
It's literally still sitting here. Maybe that was why I broke up earlier in the call. I don't know. No way to know. I've just been slow to do it because I have an inherent reluctance to spend money on things that I feel like what I have is fine, really. Like, it could be better, but like, it's fine, really. Like, this is my father's, like, he always did this, and he always chided me for, like, he'd just be like, just spend the money, just get it. And I would point out that he spent like literally almost a decade trying to buy a new stereo for the living room, like replacing his speakers that he had had since he was like 30 or whatever. And in buying a car, it took him years to buy a new car. Years. And he had a car he did not like, but he had that same thing. It was like, well, it's fine, right? Like, I don't love it, but it works. Why should I go buy a new car? And the answer was because you hate that car. And it is old enough that eventually you should just buy something nice that you will prefer to have. But yeah, he's passed that down to me, I guess.
Yeah. I hear that. Well, I don't know. We'll see where we are next week.
I guess we're living week to week, Jason.
Yeah, aren't we all?
Aren't we all? Aren't we all?
Well, Kalandar, only Kalandar knows, and he's not talking.
He's not telling us.
No,
that's for sure.
Well, if we're lucky, we'll be back next week, right here, and with an update from our homes. But until then, remain indoors. It's a Mitchell and Webb sketch. People can find it on the internet. Anyway, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.